joining me with us. This is a bit unusual, something I've been looking forward to. Basically, Dr. Ezell thought he was coming for a conversation about the future of the North American Mission Board. But this is your life, Kevin Ezell. No, it's not, but it was fun to watch his face there. All right. This really is a conversation about the future of the North American Mission Board.
All right. So let's just don't talk about the last 6 months.
Yeah, all right? That's right. Yeah. So, been up to much lately?
quite a bit. Yeah, just don't pat me on the back. There's a lot of scabs back there.
All right. Yeah. Well, actually wasn't tempted.
we're going to play that way? I just want to know the rules. All right, here we go.
You know, Dr. Kevin Ezell is president of the North American Mission Board. Previous to that, for about 15 years, was pastor of the Highview Baptist Church. Graduate of Union University, Southwestern Seminary, got his doctor of ministry degree from Southern Seminary, and has led a boring life for the last several months.
That's right.
I really look forward to this. This is our first opportunity to have Dr. Ezell back as president of our North American Mission Board. And we're going to have the kind of conversation that is really privileged and rare, and one that I think will be helpful to us all. It's going to be helpful to me to think some things through with you, Kevin, as we try to think about the denomination. I've had my own history being a part of two committees to look at the future of the SBC and the structure, and the big question every time Southern Baptists consider the future shape of the denomination comes down to what we now call the North American Mission Board. I mean, it is indispensable, but it's been difficult for us to get a handle on for, I don't know, since 1845, as this challenge began. But I also want to talk to you about the personal aspects of this, as you and Lynette have moved to Atlanta. Have you taken this on? I began teasing you out just a little bit there, but you really have had an interesting transition. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's been unique. I mean, I've always been a pastor since I was in seminary. My very first church voted me in 7-0, and my only unanimous call, and still to the day. And it's just been very difficult going from not being a pastor, because I'm a pastor, and I'd still prefer to be a pastor. And but the last 6 weeks has helped me, not to compare myself to the Apostle Paul, but it's helped me to understand more, you know, when Paul said in Acts 20, I consider my life worth nothing to me. It's not about what I prefer or what's most convenient or what's best for my family, in a sense of, and I know being in the center of God's will is best for, I know all that. I'm just saying, practically living, it's very difficult. It's not been in any way, if you say, is it a good move? In any aspect, it's not been better, you know, as far as, you know, our family. We loved it here. Yeah. And we loved our church, and I loved what I did. And so everything we did has been a transition. So it's, you know, we like where we live. It's just an adjustment. Not being a pastor, it's been an adjustment. I really don't miss the preaching as much as I do, because I get to do that. But just the connecting with people, I just love when I, you know, preaching and watching people grow in their walk with the Lord and know where they are in life. And when I preach now, you know, I preach at Shades Mountain on Sunday, one of the largest churches in Alabama. Great pastor there. I love the opportunity, but and you just don't know the people. And so it's different. I've never done that and never felt like that was my forte, but I'm just trying to adjust to it. So.
Well, I think a part of this conversation that will what will be helpful to us all has to do with what you have learned and are learning, and then what your vision is for NAM and how that comes together. But there are, in recent Baptist history, there's been no story quite like your story in terms of being elected and then facing immediately an enormous leadership challenge. And I'd just like to flesh that out a little bit, I hope I'm not making you uncomfortable here.
No.
But even if I am, I'm going to keep going anyway. So,
I've been uncomfortable 6 months. This is nothing new to me, all right?
I mean, there were a lot of people who said, some people, when you were elected, I won't work with you.
Right.
And you have pursued a strategy of of really demonstrating a kind of leadership among us, I think is really important. Talk about that.
Yeah, it's very difficult. NAM is unique in the fact that we work with 42 state conventions. And, from the outside, you may say, well, they should just do their own thing. But when you really start understanding the organization, it's really better for everyone to be in this together. For the SBC, it's better for us all to work together. And the only way to do that is to start with its relationships. I underestimated how much relationships play a part. And obviously, the trust plays a part. And I was used to my people trusting me. And so I really didn't start at zero. I started, behind the eight ball, so to speak. And I had one of a friend now told me, he says, you're not even to zero. You're at -6. And I said, well, that's better than -7. So let's start, So basically what I have tried to do, and I've flown all over the country trying to connect with guys and say, hey, we have got to do this together. And I want to work on our relationship, but we have to do this together. I can't do it by myself. And well, I just try to get them to give me a chance.
There's a particular aspect of this, though, that I want you to know I've really admired. And if someone were to ask me what someone in that situation should do, I think I would have advised what you did, but couldn't have believed it could have been done so well. And what you did was to run at the problem. In other words, in this time of transition, you didn't just let things happen. You started building relationships even with people who didn't think they wanted a relationship.
Absolutely. I think that's sometimes where even pastors make mistakes, is they try to hope things will work out, have somebody else do it for them. And so quite honestly, I did try. I said, who are the ones that will be the most difficult or the hardest to connect with, and try to connect with them? And because honestly, I know that they have a story. And I told them, looking at me from their eyes, I wouldn't have voted for me either. If I wouldn't have wanted me to do what I do. So I understand to some degree where they're coming from. What I've found is that we all have the same heart. We just, as far as wanting to see people come to know Christ and missions, we just come at it from a different perspective. So we had to get beyond it. But I've always felt like it's better to address the problem, confront it, instead of run from it. And I didn't feel like that we had the time, because coming out of GCR, where there's so many of there's so much unrest and uncertainty, of states even talking about spinning off and going out on their own. And there's so many things that are dependent upon it. I mean, if you think about the IMB, for instance, almost 100% of their support comes from churches in North America.
Right.
And so they're very dependent upon the churches in North America. And the North American Mission Board helps plant churches in North America, and the seminaries and others. And people want to withhold their money and not send it to the CP. Well, that would affect you, and it would affect IMB and NAM, not just NAM. And so some of the things that would have been perhaps best for NAM would not have been best for everyone as a whole. And so that's why we had to kind of attack it from a different vantage point.
Well, and until leaving that, I just want to point out something that I think is helpful for us all to remember. Every one of those folks that you've been reaching out to is a wonderful, gifted, highly convictional leader.
Right. Passionate.
Who is not on the wrong side of history, and is not on some other team, but really needed to get to know you. I guess the point I'm trying to make is leadership is irreducibly relationships.
Absolutely. Relationships, and I think to truly listen to people. And one of the things that's helped is to sit down, and it's important to do this in any ministry, is to go into it understanding that you do not have all the answers. And, I'm open to being tutored and mentored here, and I need to do this exponentially, at a much rapid pace than normal. So help me. And they've been very gracious to do that. But I think if you come in there acting as if you got all the answers and you're immovable, not flexible at all, and you're not really, really listening, and you already have your game plan. But that was some of the challenge, too. I think some people had the idea that there was a game plan, a conspiracy, you know, where you would call me on Friday night, and then I would do that on Monday, and then, you know, you call me again on Thursday, and then I'd do it on Friday. And that was the elephant.
It's no fun having a conspiracy if you're going to tell everybody about it.
Yeah, no. No, duh. But it was funny, as you travel around, they really did feel, yeah. Obviously because of a connection of my being your pastor for so many years, and that there was some type of smoke-filled room, you know, where people were, and I had, that was the biggest challenge, is convincing them that, okay, it's a blank legal pad. You know, I had a guy say, well, my word, it's been 2 months. You know, why haven't you given us a plan? I said, it's been 2 months. I mean, I started with a legal pad. And you got to give me a little time here. And so it was very difficult because people were convinced in their minds, some were, that this is all pre-planned, pre-packaged, and delivered, and all I need to do is run through the steps. And it just wasn't that way, as you know. So
you haven't had that meeting yet.
yeah, right. Hey, this is, I'm in a world where I can't really make jokes.
All right. That's right.
I haven't said the word house coat the entire time.
We're going to leave it right at that.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Sheesh. Now, when this position came open, and the denomination started looking, it was in the context of the Great Commission Resurgence Task Force doing its work and all the rest. There's just so much interest and expectation invested in this.
Right.
And at some point in that process, the Lord really did something in your heart to incline you to that work.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk to us about that. How, you know, you were pastor.
Right.
How did that happen?
Yeah, it's really odd. I really sensed well over a year before that I went to the North American Mission Board that God was doing something in my heart, my life. And I had met with some of our staff at Highview and said, you know, I don't know really what this is, but I just get a sense that God has something better for our church, and that I'm not going to be a part of it. I don't really know what it is, because they can tell you, I had no desire to go to another church. This wonderful church, and had no desire to do any. That was my concern. I had no idea what I was going to do. I just knew that I really sensed that in my heart. And then I was reading through actually Brother Tom's book, Eliph's book on prayer, and God began to work in my heart that might be something. Someone had told me that they had nominated me or recommended me 6 months prior to that, but. It all really started with I was more convinced and still was more convinced that it was time for me to leave Highview more so than it was time for me to go to NAM necessarily. And a lot of, you know, it's really been an awkward transition. But God prepared my heart because I knew it was right more so for our people and our church than it was necessarily for me, and then he showed that clearly. I mean, I feel very confident we are where we need to be and should be, and I'm being obedient, and I'd be afraid not to be where I'm at because I would be disobedient. But to say it's fun, it would be, you know, it would be an exaggeration.
No, but you found fun in it. I know you, and I appreciate that. I think you kind of have to find your fun.
Right.
Even
it's not
in
all
the
about
difficult
fun, but
thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
try to.
You know, because when a lot of people think about fun, they think about, well, things that I guess are frivolous, but there's a joy in the midst of this. And
and
frankly, there are funny things. I mean, funerals sometimes end up being funny.
Oh,
in
let's,
ways
don't,
that are,
yeah, but, let's don't go there.
I mean, just things are, things are, wasn't, but things can be, you know, construed where you look back and you say, you know, that was a moment of incredible moment, significance,
right.
Tension. It was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But it only in
retrospect. It was like when you were in the hospital that time.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. I don't know if you, Dr. Mueller was in the hospital, was very ill several years ago, and it was really actually a very serious moment. And Mary was there, and I went to his side. She said, I'll let you guys spend some time together. And so she left the room, and you know, as a pastor, sometimes you're in situations where you really don't know what to say. And Dr. Mueller laying there with tubes, and it was very critical. And He said, Kevin, they say that I might die. And I said, yes, sir, that's what I understand. And then I thought, the only thing I knew to say was what I thought any other pastor would say. And it was simple, if you do, can I have your library?
That's right. Yeah. And oddly enough, that was therapy. You know? Yeah.
He knew it. Two books would take me 10 years to read.
Well, no, it actually gave me something new to live for.
You're getting so much better at that.
Yeah. Well, time will tell. When you looked at the North American Mission Board as a pastor,
yes,
what did you see? Right. What were you looking at from that perspective?
Sure. I was asked that question by the search committee. Mm-hmm. And they said, what do you think of North American Mission Board when you think of it? And I said, I think it's pathetic. And honestly, from a pastor's perspective, it seems pathetic. I think it has potential. But I said, you look like the Montreal Expos.
Explain.
Yeah. It's a baseball team.
Okay, all right.
But, and then one of the guys says, well, the Montreal Expos, they don't exist anymore. And I said, that's my point. You won't either if you keep doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And, you have the resources of the Yankees, but you put the Montreal Expos on the field. And I was simply saying, you're underperforming. Mm-hmm. And so you have got to make a radical change. And so, and I told them, I'm not pursuing this. This is not what I would choose. I'm a pastor. But if we do this, you're agreeing to an absolute overhaul. Because I do not want to do what you do. And because no one knows what you do. That's part of the problem. I mean, you say NAM. You know, my daughter's union with Katie. And when they would come up, people would say, hey, congratulations. I heard your dad's the new president of NAM. They would say, well, thank you. And they'd say, what is a NAM? And I was like, see, that's my point. People just don't know. In the past, they would just, in a sense, take 2 6-shooters and just start shooting in the air, hoping they hit a bird. And it had no point at all. And we're just trying to put, that's...
I got that.
On a hunting term.
I got that.
But our analogies just don't mix.
Yes, right? I'm hanging with you there.
No,
all right.
I went by a bookstore earlier today, but...
Well, I want you to flesh that out just a little bit, because the Home Mission Board was established in 1845.
Right.
When Southern Baptists came together and organized this denomination, all they did in the beginning was establish 2 mission boards.
Right.
And you look back at the International Mission Board, now as it's called, it was then the Foreign Mission Board, mm-hmm. and you know, we've got statues of missionaries.
Right.
We've got famous missionaries, missionary martyrs. We've got a legacy of international missions that... Right. Frankly, the more you know, the more excited you get.
Absolutely.
You've gone to be the leader of an agency that never had a golden era.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So we kind of got it wrong beginning in 1845?
Well, the challenge, as I told the committee, I said, you have no championship banners. I mean, you've not even won a conference champion. I mean, there is no golden age. Mm-hmm. There's nothing you point back to where...
So why is that? Do a little autopsy on that
for
us.
I think the challenge is, again, I have the pleasure in some regard and the challenge of working with 42 different states, and you have that many people that you're trying to work through a process. It can be very difficult. There's so many intricacies there.
And so just to be clear, so that we all understand... The International Mission Board basically goes a place, and wherever it lands, it's the SBC there.
Right.
But your challenge is, wherever you go in North America, that's already...
someone else's backyard.
Someone else's, yeah, property. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we jointly work in some of those states, and it's just unique. Because the thing is, as I was telling them, we really do not have a national strategy. That's why we come up with Send North America. We want to have a national strategy. And these guys, as I said, they have great hearts, but the challenge is they would admit there's 42 of them. They all have 42 different levels of excellence or standards of excellence. And there is accountability in some of the states, and there is lack of accountability in different areas. And so you really can't, you know, in one fell swoop describe the whole group, because some do it very well, some need some work in different areas. And so, but we have no national strategy where we all work together, just like in church planning. If you go to Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, there's different expectations for a church planner in each one of those states, and they have different expectations or hoops that you'd have to jump through, which makes it very difficult. And that's why even church planners will call several different states to see who'll give them the best deal, so to speak, in support and what they expect of a church. And we want to come up with a national strategy, and we've just not had that. And they would agree that there's not been a national strategy. There's 42 different state strategies, and NAM kind of does their deal, you know.
I spoke yesterday in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
and
I heard you did very well.
Well, thank you. I had a great time. But at the event, one of our church planning pastors doing a really outstanding job, you know, showed up.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah,
we were able to talk with just a bit. And we've got in Boston and in Atlanta and other places just some phenomenal stories.
Incredible.
That aren't being told. So in one sense, there are some fantastic things being done, but Southern Baptists don't really know about them.
No, absolutely. You're right. And many of them come from Southern. Some great heroes of the faith out there. I mean, and that's one of the biggest blessings I've enjoyed the last 5 months of walking the streets of Boston or New York or downtown San Francisco and seeing young men and their families invest in those communities and make a significant difference, and they're doing incredible jobs. I mean, to be running a couple hundred in a Philadelphia. I mean, there's a graduate right now from Southern, graduated from here 8-9 years ago, been pastoring in Philadelphia. Runs 400, which is huge in Philadelphia, and is in the process of mentoring 10 other church planters. And that's how you should do it: a planter multiplying other plants and mentoring church planters and having practitioners do that. And so you're absolutely right. And we've just not marketed it. I mean, you go back and they've done a very poor job of telling the story.
Right.
And these guys are incredible. We've got a guy right now that preaches. He's starting an English-speaking church in Boston in a day. And at night, he's doing a Russian-speaking church plant. And again, I mean, I could just go from city to city telling and one of the very best ones we have in Boston, we had a church decide every month, the first weekend of the month, they would send a mission team of 3 to 5 people to that church planter just to encourage he and his wife. And they were going to do it the first weekend of every month. So 3 to 5 people would fly to Boston. They'd take he and his wife out to eat at a restaurant of choice, love on them, bring her a gift. The next day, do whatever he needed done. On Sunday, they would serve in some capacity at the church and then fly home. They've did it for 3 years, every first week of the month. And that is the most successful church plant we have because of the connection between the church and the church planter, and churches planting churches. But you see,
it's kind of thing a lot of churches could do, but they're going to have to hear about it to kind of catch the virus.
That's something that any church could do. I mean, any size church can send a mission team of 3 to 5 people somewhere and to fly to a major city and spend a weekend there and loving on some missionaries. And that's why we're very excited about the Send America strategy, because it allows churches to do exactly that, to connect and to know the names. Like you said, we know the names of some of our international missionaries, but we don't. When you think of church planters, we don't. People don't even understand it. And the reason is because you go to Mississippi, and there's one church for every 1,400 people in Mississippi, Southern Baptist. In Alabama, there's one church for every 2,000. But you go to New York, and there's one church for every 57,000. In New Jersey, there's one for every 75,000. In Canada, there's one church for every 207,000 people. And so it's incredible darkness and lostness out there. And sometimes I think we get so used to things being, we just think it's like it, like like it is here. We think it's that way everywhere, and we forget the perception. I mean, you travel a considerable bit, and so you see the needs there. And I just believe when you take people and help them see the needs, and they're much more active. We have what's really exciting. I was in Florida the other day at Fort Myers, and a young couple, let's say a young retired couple came up. They were retiring, 58, 59. They said, hey, we're retiring. We want to do something significant. Do you have anything for us? And we said, absolutely. We're in the process of coming up with a whole missionary group where you can move to a major city for 2-3 years and invest in a church planter. Just come alongside and be a part of his church plant and help that church plant. And you get finished with that one in 3 or 4 years, you can jump to another one in the same city or move to another city. And they were ecstatic that there was some way for them to be involved in missions. And he was a very successful CEO of a company, but wanted to do something significant with his life. And to finish it out, and they were excited. But people just don't know how to, and it was so sad. I was in Florida last week, and the guy says, "I'm pastor of a church of 300. How can we plant a church?" And he had no idea. And he's in Florida, for crying out loud. We should be able. The North American Mission Board should be doing a better job of explaining, and we are going to show them how they can pray and how they can participate. And how they can partner.
For roughly over 160 years now, we've been planting churches. Mm. But there aren't that many churches to show for all that effort at planting churches. Can you do kind of an autopsy on that? Why have we not been more effective?
Yeah, it's very sad. I say sad. It's been one of the more frustrating things. When I first got to North American Mission Board, I said, tell me, how many churches do we have? Show me the list of the church plants in 2005. Give a 5-year success rate. And they said, we don't have it. I said, what do you mean you don't have it? You're the North American Mission Board. And they said, we just don't have a list like that. And I said, well, give me the ones in 06. And they said, we don't have that. I said, well, give me the ones from last year. And we don't have it. What do you mean you don't have? How could you even know your success rate if you don't have it?
Don't ask, don't tell.
Evidently. And it was And the challenge is what they typically would do, just to give you a real quick scenario. I wouldn't blame it on the states because this NAM didn't ask for it. And so they would say, they'd call, Northwest and say, how many church plants did you have? They say 15. They say Pennsylvania, 23. New York, how many? 42. And they go through the list and add them all up, and they say, well, that's 1,500. And then they do a real fancy video for the SBC and say, so many churches per day is as Southern Baptist, and we can all celebrate and how much we're doing, you know. And then they pass out peppermints, and everybody goes home. And it's just it's just not the case. So we've been starting to go back and do an autopsy. And so what we have on some of those lists, there would be churches that would be listed 2 and 3 years in a row. And there is also when someone would say, okay, there's 40 church, there are 40 on the list. Well, maybe 20 of those would be affiliations. Those are churches that already existed maybe for 10, 15, 21, 60 years, and now they want to affiliate and become Southern Baptist. We're thankful to have them a part of the family, but that is not a birth new plant church. And so we're having to go back and peel it back. And so here's what's going to happen, basically, is when we explain this to the Southern Baptist Convention, we're going to say, we have not been planning. That's why I keep saying we have not planning 1,500. That offends people every time I say it. And I'm sure I will again today, but we've not been planting 1,500 churches a year. We're just not doing it. And anybody can say that they have an 85% success rate, a 75 or 100. They can say anything they want because we do not have the names of the churches to even prove or disprove it. I mean, you can't prove or disprove it. And so the reason we've changed that this year, and they've all been very good about it. The states have worked very well with us. They've given us the names of the churches that they planted. And because we asked for them this year, and they graciously gave them to us. And so now we're going back, and we want to establish a database of all of the birth churches in 2010, and then all the ones that will happen in 2011, and track those so we can see what the success rate is, down the road. And we're going to assign them each an SBC number so that they're, there's not duplicates, and so we can easily keep up with any kind of overages. And because we want to track
church plants, not just affiliates. It's good to keep track of those, but we want to see actually how many churches, because basically we've been celebrating things that we're not doing. And it's time in the North American Mission Board's life that we're going to have to just confront the brutal facts and define reality. And basically you have to say to the Southern Baptist Convention, as Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, you've heard it said, but I say unto you, and you've heard it said that we have this many missionaries, but I say unto you, you know, this is the way they count those. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm set myself up for, hey, look, see, Ezel went to NAM, and we're planting a third of the amount of churches that we used to, you know.
But we can find those.
Right. Yeah. That's the hope. But again, I say the states have done everything I've asked them to do. And there's a lot of this rest at the North American Mission Board. And what I found is, actually going back to Home Mission Board days, and I had not read a lot of this, but I have in the last 5 months or so, we've taken a lot of Home Mission Board had some very good policies and of actually a much better system of accountability than the new NAM did. And so we're trying to, in a sense, take the best practices of both and mesh those together.
I want to go to the state conventions in a minute, but let me stay with church planting. What do you think makes for an effective, genuine, lasting church plant?
The planter. It's the planter. And we've got to have the sending churches take better care of that church planter. And that's why, you know, I just encourage you, and it's a help to consider it as a possible mission choice. Because you go to Miami, or you go to New York, Philadelphia. I mean, it's very difficult. But I just want you to know that there is help on the way, as far as we are going to do a much better job. And we have some of our missionaries out there right now. We would be giving them too short of a runway. They'd say, okay, go to Boston and plant you a church. We're going to take care of your health insurance for 2 years. Or basically, you know, they would basically set a church planter, if you would, in a tub filled with water, and then they push the drain and say, okay, have that church planted before the water gets out of the tub, and you better hurry. And he's out there trying the best he can, and then in 2 years, 3 years, he's just about to get it to 60 or 70, boom, buzzer ran off, you know, we're done, and we yanked the money. And what we found is we'll get them started, and then just at the point where they need it the most, we'll yank it. And what we're looking at is reversing that and putting in some reward-based, we'll come up with a better term, but so that at certain levels we kick in even stronger and not withdraw the money, but actually help them get over some of those hurdles that you encounter at 75 or 100. Mm-hmm.
I had the opportunity prior to coming here of working in a state convention.
Right.
And what I found surprised me. In that I had always kind of operated at the SBC level, and even in thinking about the SBC, I had not given enough thought to the state conventions. And that was in Georgia, which is one of the old, most established of the conventions. And the fact is that when it comes to, for instance, a lot of the language work, a lot of the specialized understanding, the states are, first of all, they've been there a long time.
Right.
And they're pretty indispensable in terms of their knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so what you're doing is working at a synergy here.
Right. And that's one of the things I regret. I didn't take the time to really fully understand all that they did. And there is a good amount of legitimacy to a lot of what they do. And what we sat down and trying to discuss is like, you know, there's some things that you do extremely well that we really don't need to even be a part of. NAM. And what we need to decide is simply, what are the ones that where we can do it better together? And some of the things you would do better without us. And let's just both, in a sense, have the freedom to do that. But they are absolutely right. There are some things that they do very well, and they know their area. And that's why I've tried to assure the people in the Northeast, as we've gone regional, as we look at some of these things. I don't want to fly up to New York and tell them how to do their how to plant churches in New York. I don't know. I'm not a church planter. I love to plant churches, but I've never done it. And I'm not going to go to California and tell them, here's how you do it in San Diego. We want to trust their expertise on the field. Let's just work together, but also give us freedom, you know, to hold a good sense of accountability. And that's all we've asked for. And they've been very gracious in working with us.
Well, you wouldn't want to go into Atlanta to start a Vietnamese language church that the Georgia Baptist Convention wasn't very involved in.
Absolutely not. It'd be very foolish to do that.
Right.
Yep.
At the same time, I think one of the great challenges for the SBC, this came within the Great Commission Resurgence process, is that we look at where our total mission expenditures are concentrated. And in North America, they're still concentrated where we're concentrated. Mm-hmm. And the great challenge is to try to get more of those funds to the places where, not only because of Baptist chauvinism, we just want to make sure we got more Baptist dots on the map. That
right.
better not be the reason.
Right.
But because there are such vast unchurched populations.
Absolutely. And when you say resources, obviously, I mean, incredible amount of resources are in what we call the South region now. They would refer to it as the mainline states. It's basically the SEC and the ACC, and the rest of the conferences are going to hell. And so you have those basketball divisions.
Thanks.
All right. And so you have the majority of the resources down here. Well, NAM, as we distribute funds, about 75% to 80% of the funds we distribute do go to those the Northeast and the West. But the overwhelming majority of the resources that are kept, obviously, in state and all. Are in the South. And so what I've tried to explain to people is we have to focus where obviously the greatest areas of lostness are. I mean, it'd be foolish not to. And that is in the West, the Northeast, and Canada, and the Midwest, Chicago. And right now what's really been a challenge for us is people want to go to the city. They like the city. It seems a little bit more sexy. But we really need, in the suburbs of some of those cities is where we really need people to go. It's where the families are settling, and it's harder to get guys to do that. But you're absolutely right. We have to shift the resources, and at the same time, as you know, I mean, we're still as we sprinkle. We still want to. I've tried to explain is tell those churches, I mean, those states in the South. We're not saying don't plant churches where you are. Do that, but that. Well, our focus is going to be is these unreached areas, and so we're really saying both and not either or. And
they really have an interest in that, too. I mean, to be around them is to know these state executive directors want to see incredibly bold things happen.
I tell you, Anthony Jordan from Oklahoma, for example, has become a very good friend. I really like him because he's brutal. He's straight up in your face, but I like that better. I mean, he tells you that, you know, tells you just like it is, but he has a passion and a heart for the West. I mean, they have invested incredible resources in Utah, Idaho, and really have a desire to possibly do that in some other cities as well in the West. And so it's been exciting to see when he begins to talk about cities in the West, to see him get so excited about it as if it were almost in Oklahoma. And I mean, he really believes in that. And so taking that type of energy and helping and really mobilizing what we want to mobilize is thousands of churches. It's estimated right now directly involved. I know every church is with the cooperative program to some degree in church planting, but directly involved where they know the name of the church planter and they're continually at least praying for him on a regular basis. There's less than 4% of SBC churches are directly connected. And our initial goal is to get that up to 10%, which would be, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 churches mobilized and really mobilized. And we think that's the best form of missions education for people to see it, engage in it, and really get them excited about investing themselves and not just looking at it from afar.
The Great Commission Resurgence Report probably became most a concern for people and an excitement for people because of the focus on the North American Mission Board. Because in reality, all the hard questions were related to NAM. Every hard thing we did was right. related to NAM.
Right.
And has this created some energy for you going in to be able to kind of reset the table?
Oh, absolutely. There's no way we would be able to make the progress that we're making if that had not had happened. So at least, okay, let's discuss and relook at everything. But we're years down the road. Just, you know, for example, I mean, obviously we've gone in and said, okay, we're going to bring a sense of focus, and our trustees have bought into that, and we're going to bring a sense of focus. And that's why we've reduced our Alpharetta staff about 37%, and which is a significant amount. And we've been able to free up about $14 million so far from our budget this year that we're able to transition to church planting. And so we're hoping by the end of the year we'll have maybe $20 million total in the 1 year. And that'll be every year we'll have that freed up to be investing in those regions. So that in itself would not have happened. I do not believe that there had not been a plowing, so to speak, of the system of saying, okay, let's look at this. And it kind of helps say, you know, to a couple, it's like in a marriage, you know, when a couple doesn't want to, you know, acknowledge they have a problem, at least, okay, say, okay, there is a problem, let's talk about it. And then we're able to at least begin to make some progress now because we've admitted some things need to be reevaluated. The whole thing does not need to be thrown out. We just got to fix what's broken. And there are some things that are working well, but there are some things that are not working very well, and we just got to fix those.
Again, yesterday I was had the honor of delivering a lectureship on the campus of a wonderful institution of another denomination, one of the most venerable, worthy institutions in theological education. And they have to live financially on the edge in a way that Southern Seminary does not have to live.
Right.
And that's because Southern Baptists, from the very beginning of this institution's life, have poured themselves into this school. And the cooperative program in particular is just such a huge part of that. I would not have received my education. This institution would not exist.
Right.
These wonderful folks wouldn't be here in this room if we were not undergirded by the cooperative program. You have really kind of had to walk into a situation in a cooperative program organization and kind of pick that up and talk about it in a whole new way.
Right.
So talk about it.
You know, and I've seen it in a whole new way. Yeah. You know, I think even when I was a student and even as a pastor, I didn't fully understand how it all worked. And the power of our working together. I mean, you are very blessed because of the sacrificial giving of Southern Baptist. I mean, they've been they're incredible, and that's one of the blessings of again getting to sit across from them as they share stories and people even give in large amounts or just consistent in a small. I'm amazed that as Southern Baptist, you know, the average attendance in most of these states in the Southern Baptist Church is 60. And in most of the states, in Alabama, over 50% of the pastors are bivocational. These guys are just diehard. They just go there and just week in and week out, and their churches are very, very faithful. And that's been the encouragement. I have a greater appreciation for the cooperative program and how that works and all that it accomplishes now. Is that what you're going for there?
Yeah, I think for instance, when people think of what alternatives might be, it's impossible to put together anything
that would come
like the cooperative program. Nothing's going to come close to it.
Right.
Southern Baptists don't have to wake up in the morning and say, "Am I going to support Institution X or Cause Y?"
Right.
Because it's all a part of this family in which they really believe in it so much, they give so sacrificially.
Right.
I mean, look at how much these churches give. I mean, it's and look over the course of all these years how they've given. I know that when I was a student, I had no idea what was really making all this possible.
Right, absolutely. And even through a recession and the times we're through, I mean, I think it's been incredible how they've continued to give.
Right.
No, you're absolutely.
So if you were a pastor again now, how would you look at the cooperative program differently, having just even for a matter of weeks been on the other side?
Sure. Much differently. One of the regrets I have is I disengaged from the system. I got frustrated with the system and what I saw some of the I thought, with some of the clogs in it. And so I just disengaged. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I just don't have time. I've got a church to pastor. And so I didn't fully disengage, but I did back up a little bit and do things a little different. I would rethink that and do it differently now. I regret, you know, Herschel, and you look nice in your suit today, by the way, Herschel. But, you know, think Dr. York there, you know, he was the one, and when we had lunch one day, he goes, man, you really don't need to disengage. And I said, man, I'm just too frustrated with the whole thing. And he says, no, he said, the only way to change it is to stick in there and duck your head and go to work and change. It's the only way to change it is not to run from it. And I disengaged, and he did not. And obviously because of a lot of what he's done here in the state, Kentucky has changed. I never dreamed it would happen, but it has. And it's exciting days in our state. And it's a lot because of guys like he who did not disengage.
One of the things I'm glad to be able to say, having been at this nearly 20 years, and in terms of denominational life, a lot more than that, I basically find that I really like working with the people I get to work with out there in the denomination. In other words, there are very few bad surprises. Mm-hmm. There are continual good surprises.
Right, absolutely.
And so I just want to encourage and allow you to encourage folks to use the same verb, to engage. I mean, it's good.
Right. That's one thing I would make sure I want you to hear me say. I think our best days are ahead, and it's worth engaging in. And one of the things I remember asking a church planner in San Francisco, I said, why are we the nerd at the party? I mean, why is it that I'm having to try to convince you to hang out with me? And I don't mean personally. I mean, I know I'm saying with NAM and SBC, why am I having to convince you to be loyal in a sense? What we need to do is provide a compelling vision of, okay, here's what we're going to do, which I fully believe NAM has not done in the past. But it is time to engage, and as several have modeled here, to engage and be a part of it, because we can make this. It's an incredible machine that God has allowed us to be a part of, the cooperative program. And I believe its best days can be ahead. And it's easy to pick at it. But even the ones who want to throw stones at it, they don't have a better plan.
Yeah.
And they would exchange theirs with ours any day. And so I just want to encourage you to engage, and our best days ahead. I cannot be more excited about Tom Eliff at the IMB. Wish they had a guy with a little bit more experience.
It's going to be fun.
You know, yeah. It's really going to be an interesting time. So I just want to encourage you to engage. The best days are ahead.
All right. We're near the same age. I'm older, but we're near the same age. I'm going to
absolutely
just put you in my same bracket here. One day, someone's going to walk into our office and say, the gig's up.
Yeah.
it's over.
That happens more at NAM, typically, than it does.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I actually have embedded in my life some friends who will say to me, it's time. Mm-hmm. All right, so when that time comes, what do you want to be able to look back and say took place? How are you going to know if you met the goals you set? When you get to that time?
All right. Well, that's a great question. You know, when I'm able to look at thousands of healthy Southern Baptist churches, you know, I drive by East Campus and and there was nothing there,
right.
And now there is something there. And to potentially, if we can get the number up to 700 or to maybe to 1,000 eventually, you know, in the next 10 years, to plant 10,000 Southern Baptist churches, to look at the healthy Southern Baptist churches, and hopefully, I guess I would, when young seminarians would want to partner with the North American Mission Board, not just for the money, but because they feel like they have a vision that they want to buy into, and to make the process, you know, where we all work together. I told some guys the other day, we're trying to change the DNA with how we do things, how we work together, and as most entities would tell you, everyone does their thing. The seminaries work together, but Lifeway would do their thing, NAM would do it, and we didn't really share a lot of responsibilities. And so we purposely gone in and tried to find ways that we can partner with some entities to show we just want to be a new day. And I think if ultimately they say, hey, if nothing else, he came in and changed the DNA of how we relate to one another, and that we can work together and not as separate. And so, you know, that's a great question. I really need to ponder it more. Right now, I've been more in survival mode. But
well, thanks for coming to be among us today. Would you join me in expressing appreciation to Dr. Ezell for time here and fun? Appreciate you. All right. Now I'm going to close for him as we pray, and then we're dismissed. Our Father, we do come before you in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ to thank you for the moments we just had. Father, I thank you for my dear friend and brother Kevin, and I thank you for how you've given him to Southern Baptist. And Father, I just pray that you'll bless his leadership at NAM. But beyond that, I pray that you will make of this denomination of churches a body of believers who, to your glory, change the world by producing churches who reach the world for Jesus. We pray this in the name of Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.